If you've been around while I've been talking about entry points. I think that Satan sometimes looks at us as easy targets. And he does that because he's much smarter than we are, and he really sees how easy it is to grab us. The other side of that is, it's easy not to get grabbed by Satan. You just have to listen to God. That's how easy that is. And you say, wait a minute, that's not that easy. It really is that easy. What happens is Satan makes situations complicated. He makes them so that there's loopholes and gets you to the edge and lets you lean over it. And you know, and then it becomes, well, I didn't do this, or I didn't do that, or I might not have done that, or I didn't mean it this way. Satan goes, I love those terms. God is actually rather cut and dry. It's either right or wrong, evil or not evil. We've been talking about the idea that the majority of people basically just follow the flow. It's kind of like being in a cylinder. Those who do it right, they're actually in more like a funnel. And the funnel has an entry point as well. And the entry point comes from awareness, being understanding your sinful condition, understanding that there is a God, and then understanding it, considering what's been said, deciding that you're going to follow and committing yourself, and you drip out a disciple. The other side doesn't work that way. And in this illustration, it's more what keeps those that claim to be Christians from going down the funnel. Our tasks and activities seem to take all of our time, so that stops us. Otherwise, we'd be setting those short-term goals for the goals that God has given us. Today's verse, we're going to start this week, today, tomorrow, 1 Corinthians 3:18, it says, let no one deceive himself. If anyone among you thinks he is wise in this age, let him become a fool, that he may become wise. For the wisdom of this world is folly with God. For it is written, he catches the wise in their craftiness. What's really interesting is as you begin to look at your life, God says this, as he looks at all of us, he says, you know what? Those of you that think you're really, really, really wise according to the world, you're probably fools in my sight. See, the world has one way to operate. I have another. My way, the way I operate, actually will work. The way the world operates won't work. Let me give you a quick example. If you want to be self-centered, if you want the world to revolve around you, that's not going to work. In fact, what you're going to have to do if you're self-centered is find other people you can use for your own pleasure. You're going to have to find a job that you can just do what you want to do and have them pay you, whether you're accountable or not. See, one day you'll get married, but you won't get married because you want to have somebody that you can love and cherish. You're going to get married for your own needs and your own desires, and that'll be a disaster. You see, you can go through history and plot this stuff out and see that the world's wisdom is not wise. And yet still so many people cling to it. People think, you know, if I made money and I had a lot of money, I had this, they cling to it. Like, this is wisdom. No, it isn't. It's foolishness to God. You know what's not foolishness to God? Relationships. Where you trust him, where you love him, where you listen to him. That's not foolish. You see, God actually knows what he needs to do in your life. He knows why he created you. When you were in your mother's womb, he knew you. He loves you. He actually adores you. All you got to do is listen to him. Now, that's simple. That's a whole lot easier than we make it. What happens, though, we look at this pretend world of ours. And not only that, but Satan gets you into the pretend world. Let me help you understand this pretend world a little bit. Facebook is a pretend world. Say, no, it is. Yes, it is. You can say whatever you want on there. You can portray whatever you want on there. It's a pretend world. Movies, you do know they're pretend. They're things that aren't real most of the time. They're people that make up things and portray them as real. Do you know how much in your life, if you just sit down for a while and figure out how much in your life is just pretend that has become real to you? See, that's not wise. There needs to be reality there. That's why some people have a hard time with reality. Some of you are distressed over things in your life. You're inside, so you're thinking about things and you're all distressed because you're comparing your insides to somebody else's outside, and their outside is all pretend. The truth of the matter is that everybody in this room is sinful, and there's stuff that happens because of that. See, when you go into life and you understand that, hey, there's sin, there's ramifications to sin. Sin is not good. All of a sudden, you can start put things in perspective and do things right. So often we live in this pretend world. Let no one deceive himself. One of the weirdest things that we can do to ourselves is deceive ourselves. It is the toughest position to be in. And the reason it's so tough is because there's no way out of it, except for God hitting you over the head or something. Because when you're deceived, you actually believe that what you believe is true. So why would you change when you already believe it's true? If right now some of you are dealing with issues, what you'll most likely be doing is blaming somebody else for it. They're too strict or this or whatever. They don't understand. I got reason. Yeah. Anything you do, you have a reason for. It's not like you say, boy, I'm going to have a really dumb reason for this, so I'll go do that. That's really stupid and dumb. I'm going to do it. I mean, nobody does that. Instead, you say, well, I'm doing this, and you justify it, you figure out how. Somebody from the outside, like I'm an older guy, and you come to me and ask me something, I'm not looking at it from your friend's perspective. I'm not looking at it from just hanging out with you and chilling with you. I'm not looking at it like that. I'm looking at it from a different perspective. You say, so I don't want to ask you then. Probably not. Because I'm not going to give you the answer you probably want. You know who you can go to get the answer you want. Go to them. But if you want to go outside of your world and ask somebody to look at it, then you need to go to somebody who's older than you, who doesn't have a stake in it, so they can tell you what they see. Why is that important? Because you and I can deceive ourselves. We can put ourselves in a position where we've lied to ourselves and we believe the lie. And if you're there, you're in trouble down the road. You're not going to find that out until you're in trouble. See, I used to call the Bible the great deception smasher. See, the Bible can cut through all that stuff. But not if you read it and spin it in your head the way you want it. See, one of the greatest dangers, probably the greatest entry point of Satan into a life, is this deception thing. And what he does, he gets a culture, he gets a people really working on a pretend life and a pretend world, being pretend people. Do you know anyone that ever goes to church and acts like a Christian, but really, when they leave church, they act a different way? See, that's pretend. We used to call them hypocrites. But it's pretend life. And you know what's really weird is that pretend lives eventually become the normal. A real life becomes odd, weird, unique. Oh, you know what the word unique would be? Holy. If you were to translate the word holy, you could translate it in today's language as unique. You see, if you're holy, you are totally different than somebody else. Totally different than the norm. What I want to do is take a look at, I was reading the guy, Jay Gross, which you probably have never heard of, and that's fine. But what he did is he came up with 9 different things that we do to deceive ourselves. These are 9 things that are just common habits of man that at the end we end up believing lies. So what I'd like to do, since they're just entry points, again, they're ways Satan gets into your head and into your life, I want to go through these. I don't know if I'll get through them all today, but I want to go through these 9 points and say, look, this is just an entry point. This is a guy you don't even know. He's writing something saying, here's what I've observed about people. The number one thing he said, we hate those who deceive us, yet love ourselves who do the same, only worse. So we really hate if somebody deceives us, but we spend a great amount of time deceiving ourselves, and we love it. And that's a really dangerous position. Because deception, again, leaves you helpless. If you've ever felt hopeless or helpless, you're being deceived. See, because that means you don't know God. You don't know the plan. You don't see it the way it really is. If you've ever felt like, I can't go on, I'm, you know, and I'm not saying that's bad you feel that way. I'm just telling you the reason. The first thing that this guy says of his nine is the treachery of the heart is one of the first causes of self-deceit. The enemy in our own bosom deludes us into a secret approbation of our vices and flatters us with hope of eluding any future punishment or avoiding a rigorous investigation of our past lives. But what he's saying is, what we don't understand is that our hearts, our human hearts, are actually wicked. They're not good. I don't care what Oprah says about that stuff. Our hearts are wicked. The Bible makes that clear. There is no way that you can ever come to God, you can ever come to peace in life, until you understand your depravity, until you see that you are somebody who is sinful and that the sin in life actually causes problems. You say, wait a minute, that's a relative term. Sin is not a relative term. Sin is something we're all guilty of. Now, when you understand God's grace and his mercy, you understand how this whole thing works. And if you're confused by that, see, then you want to somehow say good is bad, right? No, there is a right and there is a wrong. And don't use the words good and bad when you mean right and wrong. Satan loves to get us so we don't know what we're talking about. Someone might say, well, this person is a good person. Darren is a good person. Good. A good person. And if I don't know what you're saying by that. Good compared to who? What are we comparing him to? Genghis Khan? I mean, who? I had a good hot dog. What are you comparing that to? A bad one. Now, do you all know what I mean now? No, see, the word good doesn't even have any meaning. Apart from a comparison, it has no meaning. Do you remember when somebody called Jesus good? What did he say? Yeah, nobody's good. But God, whoa. What does he mean by that? Yeah, you know, it's very interesting. Can you compare anything to God? Does the Bible say you can compare anything to him? No. What does good need? A comparison. Here's the difference. God is right. That's different than good. But listen though, because you got to catch this. God is right, which makes him good. He's not good, which makes him right. So if you want to be good, by that term, you need to be right. See, and so that's very important to understand. Here's what happens. What we want to believe is that people are generally good. And the Bible teaches the opposite. People are not generally good. We're depraved. Once I understand that, I can start dealing with things. So let's say Darren says something about the Minnesota Vikings, all right? And I go to Darren and say, Darren, you know, I'm thinking all these bad things about Darren. I want to punch him. Now, is that unusual? No, see, I'm depraved. That's not an unusual thought. Now, what happens is I'm also redeemed, so I know it's right. It's a matter of doing right, understanding right, understanding reality. See, here's the thing. I can say things in my head to Darren. Now, I grew up in Chicago, and I hate driving down there. But whenever I drive down there, I get into another kind of mind frame. And, you know, I just want to push drivers off the road and do things. And my dear wife will look at me sometimes and wonder, what comes over you? I mean, this guy cuts you off. I said, man, I got to get in front of him. Why? I don't know. Because I'm a depraved human being. And see, I don't do it because here's the honest truth. I can look at myself honestly and understand that I'm a depraved person. And in that, I can adjust. See, I'm not pretending that I don't have a problem. I'm not pretending that I don't sin. I'm not pretending that I'm a good person. I'm a sinful person. The heart is deceitful. Jeremiah 17:9, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick. Who can understand it? Are there times where you just are shocked at what you just thought about somebody? Why? The heart is deceitful. It will lie to you. your own little emotions, your own feelings, they will lie. You cannot trust them. How do you start getting better in life? You start understanding truth. That's the way it is. So how do you actually find truth then? If you can't trust, you know, I hear people in sports, I've got to be true to myself, man. You know, I got to be true to myself. What does that mean? Your heart's deceitful. You're a wicked person. What are you true to? How about being true to God? He actually knows how you're made and loves you. Listen to him, you do okay. Listen to your heart. What are you capable of? You know, some of you in this room might think you're not capable of doing something that is horrendous or really bad. No, you are. You really are. Sometimes there's one decision, man. You make one decision, and it affects. I don't know how many men. I used to speak at a prison, and a lot of men come to Christ, and I'm talking to them, and, you know, what got you in here? Man, one night, 15 minutes, man. I went out on a drinking binge. This guy got me mad, and I killed him. I wish I could have that night back. Yeah, but you do. Would you have killed him if you were sober? Probably not. I bet you wish you didn't do that, huh? Yeah, I did. I can't do anything about it now. Yeah. You know, a lot of times we think the prisons are full of people who are just really evil, evil people, that we're not like them. You're just like them. You are. And I'm just like them. The thing is, after you understand a new position, after you understand that you're depraved, after you understand that your heart is wicked, after you understand it, see, that's the truth. Once you understand that, now you're in a position to actually accept the mercy of God and the grace of God and have it do something in your life that makes you so that you're different than the rest of the world. Because the rest of the world is being run by this deceitful, wicked heart because they're godless. And there's no way to be run by anything else other than that. You want a good marriage someday? Do you want one of you, if you're a guy, do you want the girl, or if you're a girl, do you want the guy to have a unabandoned heart where they're just following their own heart, that and when their heart is wicked and evil? Do you want that? Or do you want somebody who's understood God's mercy and grace and allowed God to come in and begin to transform their life? See, one way is a pretend world. You pretend, no, I'm not that bad. I don't know how many times I've heard this. I've read article on article on article. I've done research on it of people saying you don't need God to be good. And I'm thinking, I want to see what you say. I want to see how you say somebody's good without God. So this is politically incorrect, the things that you say. Probably Jesus was politically incorrect. They put him on a cross. He used to call the religious guys snakes. The people that were in charge, they had no problem calling them hypocrites. Why? Because they didn't understand this. Look, this doesn't mean that you should walk out feeling, oh no, I'm somebody who has a depraved heart. That's the way we all are. The thing you should be walking out going is, you know, God, you know all this about me. You know everything. You know all my needs. You know everything in my life that is not good. And you still love me and want me in your family. And you still want me to have a great family down here. And you still want me to have purpose down here. And you still want me to have future with a hope. You still want that? And I'm depraved? And God will go, yes, I do. And not only that, I can give it to you. Oh, the television can't, and the movies can't, and Facebook can't, but I can. So spend your time where it belongs. See, now, if we are ones that do not understand that our heart is deceitful, that is a definite entry point of Satan into our lives. Because now we're making all things relative. And we're making excuses for ourselves and that kind of thing. The second entry point he talks about, another cause of self-deceit, is an inordinate love of pleasure, when we rather seek to be amused than to be improved. We can have no leisure for the scrutiny of thought or a proper inquiry into our own character and conduct. The line that got me there is, we rather seek to be amused than improved. You see, what happens so often in our lives is we are so into the moment, we are so into the now, that we forget about the eternity. We forget about the forever. How many of you actually understand that you're going to be dead a whole lot longer than you're alive? You know that? I mean, dead by our human like skin stuff. You're going to be alive forever, ever, forever and ever. You're going to be. However, this earth, if you live to be 100 years old, that's pretty good. But there's going to be billions of years beyond that. Why would you get so caught up in the moment? Why? Why get so caught up in the urges and the desires of right now? You know, God must look at that. Remember earlier we talked about God looking at the wisdom of the world being foolish? I mean, he must look at some of us sometimes and go, you are wrapped up in that? I mean, we are people that love our pleasure so much that when we have an opportunity to just feel good about something, regardless of what it is. If I feel good about punching Darren, you know, I have so much joy out of that in this moment that I'm just going to do it. Now, I'm not thinking of poor Darren. I'm not thinking of his family, his future wife, how I'm messing up his face. What happens is we get lost in the moment. When you get lost in the moment, Satan enters the door. Now there's a difference. See, what happens is sometimes you say, wait a minute, I thought we're supposed to walk by God moment by moment. That's a different idea. See, I am not saying that there aren't moments in history where you're walking and you're intimate with God and you change your direction. No, I'm saying you live your life saying, I have this urge, I have the desire, I need to act on it. I need to satisfy it. See, Satan gets in that one. Because now all of a sudden, guess what? There are urges and desires like all over the place, all the time. They're all over there, man. You're gonna desire, you know, to date somebody, do this, you desire that, you desire fame, you desire fortune, all the desires, Satan just starts just throwing at you. That's why when you look at the scriptures, even in early times, God said, don't covet, man. Don't covet. Don't wish you had something somebody else had. What do you think the whole media industry that you've all grown up in and I grew up in, what do you think the media industry is fueled by? Coveting. That's all they do. They're the great coveters of all time. Why? The TV does not come to you for nothing. It's very expensive. It's paid for because people are convinced that they can make you feel unsatisfied with where you're at. And you need to go out and get satisfied using their product somehow. When the Bible tells you that you should be satisfied no matter what circumstance you're in, the Bible tells you shouldn't be coveting. Why? Because God knows more than all of the people that are doing advertising. See, what we do is we open our hearts to the amusement that's in front of us. In fact, it is so important to us that we abandon other things. And Satan says, good, I'll use that. 2 Timothy 3:4, describing people that are doing it in a way that's going to destroy them, says they're treacherous and reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. You know, if you're a lover of God, don't you think you should act like it? I mean, if you are, I mean, if you really do. If I really love my wife, Linda, should I act like I do? Or should I just make it an academic thing? I could put it in writing. I could post it on the wall. Does that make me someone who shows that I love Linda? You know, what's interesting is through the years, and again, it's my 46th year here, and through the years, I've watched people at camp, and every summer there's some movie that comes out, you know, and oh, man, you see it. Boy, the buzz about it, incredible. I have never, ever seen the buzz about God's grace like that or anything about God or anything about the Bible, never. I've never seen it. I should say, just last week, some girl was talking to me, and she said, man, I just have this hunger for God's word. And she wanted to talk to me. I thought, that's good. That's good. I like that. A hunger for God's word. I don't hear that much. Oh, man, but they got a new blockbuster movie out there. I bet you what? You're figuring out how to get there. You're figuring out how to rearrange your life to get there. You don't want to be left out or anything. Not only that, you got this love of pleasure more than you love God. You see, when we become people who love pleasure more than God, what happens is we become like irrational animals. In 2 Peter 2, it says, but these, like irrational animals, creatures of instinct, you and I are not part of the animal kingdom. We were created different. We were created by God in his image, which is totally different than all the animals that ever were on the earth. Science would love to back the bus up over you on the while they do that. But they'd love to back it up and let you know that basically you're no different than a chimpanzee or an alligator or anything else. You got all the same qualities as a mouse. Now, I'm not saying that mice don't have qualities that you and I might share, and some of you might have pig parts in you because they use pig parts for things in operations. I'm not sure. But one thing I do know is that you're not an animal, that there's a distinction between man and animal by God. And if you live your life as one who is an animal, what happens is you end up in a hopeless state. See, if you're an animal, you just are taking care of your urges, and you're running by your fears. So if I'm a horse, you know, I got eyes on the side of my head so I can spin it around like this, and I can see 360 very quickly because some animal's going to chase me and eat me. And I have ears to go all over the place so I can hear what's going on, wherever the danger might be. And God made me that way, and I actually live my life in fear all the time because I have to run to keep my, because the lions and the tigers and the bears and the old mice might get me. And so I have to do something about that. See, I don't have to live my life in fear. I'm different than that. Say, oh, how do you not fear? How do I not fear? Do you know God? Do you know who He is? Do you know what He can do? Do you understand that He loves you? Do you understand that if you're a believer, He's your Father and He can take care of everything? What are you fearing? Take it to Him. 1 Peter 5:8. You know, cast your care upon Him. Why? He cares for you. Who is that? That's God. Cast your care upon a God that cares. Yeah. And by the way, He can fix it. He can make it work. See, a horse, he doesn't know that. He's got to move the ears and eyes, and he's got to worry for that lion. I don't have to. I could be Daniel in the lion's den, throw me to him. Go ahead. They'll just shut their mouths. See, there's a difference between me and an animal. An animal doesn't think much of anything. They go to the bathroom, they just go. I don't care. Wranglers, clean it up. I don't care. I just go where I want to. You know, they want to breed, they breed. Get out of the way. See, that's the way it works. You're not animals, but what's interesting is Peter comes and says, what happens is there's people who don't get it. They don't get it. So they act like animals. They actually look at animals. Man, I wish I could be like that. I wish I didn't have any restraints. I wish I could do that kind of stuff. No, you don't. But we get reduced to that. See, all of a sudden you're going out there and you're just wanting pleasure. In other words, you have this urge, you have this desire, and you're going, I don't know, I got this urge. I've got to take care of it. Do you realize that you can have an urge and desire today and you don't have to do anything with it? You don't have to take care of it. I could want to punch Darren and walk right by him. The urge to do it? Yeah. Why? He's a Viking fan. We don't like them. And what do? Right by him. Didn't tell him, punch him. I don't feel like I wasted my day. I don't feel depraved. Nothing. I'm not doing it because it's not right. You see, what happens is you've grown up in a culture of society where you have to have everything go your way and the way you feel and satisfy your... That's animalistic. That isn't Christian. That isn't even the way you're made. See, you're made to be able to identify right and wrong. You're made to be able to live in the right. You're made to make choices. You have volition, which means choice. You're made in the image of Almighty God. Don't waste that by saying, I'm so into this momentary pleasure of life. Don't waste this. And when Peter looks at it, and Peter of all people, if you knew where he came from, this guy's always putting his foot in his mouth. He understood what he's saying here. He said, but these, like irrational animals, creatures of instinct, born to be caught and destroyed, blaspheming about matters which they are ignorant, will also be destroyed in their destruction. Peter's saying, you know what, these people don't understand it. They actually come across like they know what they're talking about. They speak like they actually know what they're talking about, but really they're ignorant. Now, what's really interesting is you can talk all day. If you think rhetoric is important, you can grab phrases and sayings and say them all day long and sound real impressive and sound real compelling and still be wrong. I saw I used this illustration before, but I have a good friend who is who was a national debate champion from Wheaton. And one day he said something actually on Facebook. And it wasn't right. And I just I know you're never supposed to correct people on Facebook, I guess. That's one rule that's out there somewhere. But I didn't correct them on Facebook. I went behind the scenes there and did it. And I said, boy, you shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be saying that. And I finished it with a little phrase to him. I said, and by the way, I understand if you got into an argument with me, you'd bury me. You're very good with words. He's wrote speeches for two presidents. He knows how to use words better than anybody I've ever met. But I ended the line saying, if you wanted to debate me on this, you'd win the debate. But truth's on my side. I win in the end. And he wrote me back and goes, you are absolutely right. And that was it. He was wrong in what he was doing, and he understood that he could out-debate me, but he understood that the words didn't mean anything. All of you that have ever taken a debate class know that. You go to a debate class, what do? You take this side, you take that side. I don't believe in that. Doesn't matter. Take it anyway. Okay. So then you try and convince people of something you don't even believe. And you win. You go, whoa, that's good. I just convinced everybody of the lie. How can you do that? Because it's all words. Satan's really good at that word stuff. He's really good at persuasion. He's really good at convincing you that you're right, that you're not somebody who actually needs God or his help. He goes on to say, suffering wrong, the wage for their wrongdoing. What's interesting here is the people that do this, the people that love pleasure, they seek to be amused rather than improved, they live their lives in a way where the urges of their life have to be satisfied right now. There's going to be consequences for that. There cannot not be consequences for it. There will be. And they're not good consequences. And that's what Peter's saying. They basically are suffering and they are distressed because of the decisions they have made. You know, I still, and again, I'm sorry for any repetitive stuff, but I still remember one day I was getting, I was in college, and I'd hit a guy in the helmet with my hand, and did something where something was banged up, and I needed an operation on it. And I was in the recovery room after the operation. And it's funny how you can remember things. You're not really there, but you're there, but you're not really there. I don't understand those drugs they put you to sleep with. But I was coming out in the recovery stage, and I kept yelling at the nurse. I mean, I was giving it to her. Let me go back to my room! You know, I'm just giving it to her. I'm yelling at her. And she kept coming over. She was very calm and putting her hand on me and saying, as soon as you ask me nicely. And man, I was just getting ticked. I'm in this state, and I'm yelling at her louder. And she put her hand on me, asked me nicely. And I kept yelling at her more. And I'm going, oh man, that woman, if I could even move! You know, obviously I was drugged up. I couldn't do anything. Finally, I was laying there for a minute, and I thought, did she say I just got to ask her nicely? I mean, not because my mind was playing with the drugs or something. And she came over, and I said, can I go back to my room now? And she goes, you sure can. That was it. I went back to my room. I thought, I asked you that like 100 times before. Yeah, but you didn't ask me nicely. You see, what she knew, she understood something. She knew that in my state, I was asking for something. I wasn't getting it because I was going against what the medical people told me I needed not to go against. So I deserved to stay there until I did what I was told. See, what happens a lot of times in our lives, we go, I don't understand why my life is so rough. I don't get it. Well, because of the choices you've made till now. Oh, yeah? Yeah, really. At my age, I talk to guys who have heart attacks. I don't understand, man. It must be hereditary. Might not be. Might be the lack of exercise and the overweight and all that stuff, too. Might be. I don't know. You see, what happens after a while is there's a total button that gets hit. And when the total button, like I can go do something right now. I can eat, you know, donuts and do stuff. I can do that now, and I don't pay for it right now. But I keep doing that. One day, there's a total button that gets hit, and it's like, boom. And why does it get hit? Because I deserve, really, I actually earned that problem by ignoring the truth. And I chose to ignore the truth. I don't know how many people I've talked to through the years, and talking about guys my age, and I'm talking to them, and I'll sit with them, and you get my age, you know, you start to struggle with some things. You start to not be as athletic as you used to be, you start to get this pot belly kind of thing, you start all kinds of stuff. And they'll sit there and use age as an excuse and all that. And you sit there and go, no, you know what? You eat too much. You don't exercise enough. That's your problem. Oh, eventually go, yeah, I guess so. Why? Because we want to believe that we don't have a problem. That everything that's really bad in our life is a circumstance beyond our control. That somehow we ended up getting the short end of the straw. And God's going, really? That's what I would do? You know what? If you believe that, I don't think you know God. God didn't give you a short end. He didn't. Now I'm not saying that some of you haven't faced the ravages of sin. And you might have faced abuse. You might have faced of different kinds. You might have faced all kinds of trials in life. And they may, you're a five-year-old person when that stuff happens. That's not your fault, really. So you say, I'm a victim. You are. You're not a victim, though, of God and his ability. You're a victim of the desperate hearts, the wicked hearts of somebody. You're a victim of sin. And what you should really hate is sin and not God. It's sin that's the problem. Not God is the problem. And what would happen if you began to hate sin? You'd start to stay away from it. You don't go to things you hate. No, instead we do the opposite. It's like, oh God, you could have stopped it. Well, he could have. But think of the ramifications of that. What if God did that to everybody that wanted to sin and stop them? There'd be no love. There'd be no choice. There'd be no relationships. There'd be no realness in life at all. You want him to do that? One of the greatest things that you will ever discover is that you will have a relationship with God and one day, hopefully, a relationship with a husband or a wife. And you will see how precious that is. And what makes it precious is the fact that you get to make choices to put that other person first in your life. Because that's how God made you. Now, when you do that, the relationship is incredible. And you go, whoa, this is worth fighting for right here. This relationship thing, that's worth fighting for. Yeah, it is. So why would we ever say to God, I wish you would just not have let this happen by making people not make the choices? He won't do that. Because on the other side of it, the choices make the relationships, and the relationships are extremely valuable. He will not destroy relationships to try and preserve a moment of peace for you. So what happens to you then? Well, let me tell you this. If you've ever been abused or hurt or as a young person or even recently, God knows. And he says this in the Bible, that if somebody causes a young one to go astray, it'd be better for a millstone to be tied around their neck and them thrown into a deep abyss. See, God loves you and he knows what went on. You know what your response ought to be is to come to him. And say, God, you hate sin too, don't you? You hate what happened to me, don't you? And God would say, yes, I do. And then you turn it around. You know, my own father did that. His dad was an alcoholic, beat him all the time. He didn't have a good life as a kid. He would be characteristically one that would have been considered today abused as a child. He was the best dad that a person could ever have. He started this ministry, started several others. Why? He wanted young people to have a place where they could go and find hope. Yeah. Did he use his past and the sin and to stop them? No, it was more like a springboard. It was like, boy, that wasn't good the way I was treated. That wasn't right. But I got a God. I've got a Father. You know what else he found? In that process, God provided him a mentor, an older person that loved God that would help him. See, those are two very important ingredients. God, number one, and someone who loves God that's about 20 years older than you, number two. Why? Because they can help you. See, that's what you need. It's not this. You see, what Peter is saying, yeah, choice. You can live your life, say, this is my age. I got these urges. I got these desires. I love to be amused. I'm thinking of now. Yeah. And then someone at my age comes and goes, you know what? Maybe you should think about later. Maybe you should do this. No, you're just an old guy. No, maybe you should do this. Why? Because I'm an outside observer. I'm really not involved in your emotions and hormones. I'm not. I'm over here. So I get to look at you and go, cool. I remember being there, but I'm not there right now. See, now all of a sudden you got a trusted friend you can talk to. And say, yeah, boy, I didn't see it. No, you didn't. I understand that. I'm not even condemning you. I'm just saying, whoa, not good. You know, if you came to me and said, I don't know, every time I pass Darren, I want to punch him. I go, I understand. But here's the deal. You shouldn't. See, you shouldn't. What are you saying that for? I get such pleasure out of it. I know. But see, just because it brings you a moment of pleasure does not mean anything. That's an entry point for Satan himself. Because I will guarantee you this. If he thinks he can get you by just that moment of pleasure, if he thinks he can get you with that, he will. He'll play that card every single time. You need to get to the point where you understand. Don't be religious. Don't be someone who sets rules and that kind of thing. But here's what you need to understand. You have urges and desires in life and feelings. They tell you about you, but they shouldn't direct you. They do tell you about you, though, how you're thinking. Use them to honestly evaluate what's going on. Is your universe really just about you? Is that all that matters to you, is you? Well, you're in trouble. I mean, check it out. I'm just telling you as an old guy, you're in trouble. Because really, it should be about God. He's the one who the universe does revolve around, not you. See, once you begin to play this game right, once you begin to understand life, and you begin to understand that your heart is desperately wicked, and you are capable of things that you shouldn't be involved in, and you're capable of thoughts and ideas and actions, you begin to say, whoa, that punching Darren thing, not good, I'm not doing it. I would challenge you to just practice saying no to your feelings, by the way. I would. It's a good practice. Oh, you know what, if you do it and you start a religious cult that say we're people that just say no to our feelings, don't do that. But it is good. Next time you want, let's say you're eating here in the dining hall and you want to have seconds, and you get up and go, I really want seconds, go, I'm not going to. I'm just going to put the plate back, I'm not going to. You go, whoa, you know, the difference is very simple. You're just beginning to learn that it's meaningless whether you took seconds or not, really. It's not, God's not going to go, oh, yay, you. That's not what we're talking about. Or a candy bar. You go, there's a candy bar laying there. I really would like, you know, you're reaching out to you. I go, whoa, stop, don't eat it. Why? I'm just going to say no to my desire right now. I'm just going to say no to it, just for the fun of it. You say, that's not fun. No, it's not. But you know, it's very helpful down the road. Because one day, if you keep just going after your desires and placating them, you keep going after them to satisfy them, Satan's going to throw a curveball at you, and one of those desires is going to trip you up, and you're going to wish it didn't. You need to be committed to what's right, not what's good. And by the way, if you're committed to what's right, you'll be doing what's good, by the right definition. You need to understand, your heart is depraved, and you seek amusement, and Satan will use these two entry points, making you think your heart is not depraved, and that since everyone else seeks amusement, it's okay, and you should be focused on now. He will use those to get in your life. I just hope we get through 9, we got through 2, we'll get through maybe some more tomorrow. Let me pray. Father, again, thank you that we could meet this morning. I pray that today that you will continue to speak to our hearts, work on our lives, allow us to be lights in dark places, allow us, Father, to show the world who you are. Please keep this place safe. Again, we thank you for the rain. We ask that the crops in the air will grow well. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.